Chapter 6. The King and the Duke. 2 or 3 days slipped by, slowly and lovely. Sometimes it seemed we had the whole river to ourselves. One morning I was heading up a creek in the canoe, looking for berries. All of a sudden, here comes a couple of men tearing along fast as they could. They called out and begged me to save their lives. They said they hadn't done nothing, but was being chased for it. Said there was men and dogs a-coming. I got them into the canoe and snuck back to the raft before anybody could see them. One of these fellows was about 70 or more, and the other was about 30. We all had breakfast and laid off and talked. By and by, the young fellow tells us he's the Duke of Bridgewater. He says he's been cheated out of his title and land. He lets on that Jim and me should wait on him and call him my lord. Then the old fellow says he's the Dauphin, cheated out of being the King of France. We should wait on him too, and call him your majesty. I make up my mind pretty quick that these two are nothing but cheats and liars. But if I never learn nothing else from Pap, I learn the best way to get along with his kind of people is to let them have their own way. They asked us a lot of questions. They wanted to know why we kept the raft hid and traveled at night. So I told them my folks was all dead, and all I had left was my slave, Jim. But so many people thought he was a runaway slave and tried to take him away from me. So I kept him out of sight. We stopped at a little one-horse town that was almost empty. Everybody was away at the camp meeting. The Duke spotted an empty printing office with the door unlocked, so he said he'd fix up something to make it safe for Jim to travel in the daytime. Me and the King lit out for the camp meeting. There, under a shed of crowds of people, were crowds of people and a preacher on a platform. He was shouting his words out with all his might. He'd shout, "Oh, come to the bench! Come, black with sin!" And the people would yell out, "Amen!" And they worked their way to the bench, shouting and crying. Well, the first thing I knew, the King got it going, and you could hear him over everybody. He told the crowd he'd been a pirate, but now he was a changed man. He was going to the Indian Ocean to reform other pirates, even though it would take a long time because he had no money. In no time, people were singing out that he should pass his hat around. So he does. He got $87. While we'd been at the meeting, the Duke had printed up a poster saying Jim had run away from a plantation in New Orleans. The poster also said there was a $200 reward for him. So whenever anybody got asking questions about Jim, we could say we caught him and was taking him back for the reward. The King and Duke figured they'd do scenes from Shakespeare in town. So the next few days, the raft was very lively, with sword fighting and speeches. The next town we landed in was called Bricksville. I was loafing around the main street that afternoon when somebody sings out, "Here comes old Boggs. He's in from the country for his little old monthly drunk." Boggs comes tearing along on his horse. He was over 50 years old and had a very red face. He's whooping and yelling like an Indian. He says he's going to kill old Colonel Sherburne. One of the men hanging around tells me, "He don't mean nothing. He's always a-carrying on like that when he's drunk." Boggs rode up before the biggest store in town and starts calling Sherburne everything he could think of. By and by, a proud-looking man about 55 steps out of the store. "I'm going to take this till 1 o'clock, Boggs, and no longer," the man says. Some men crowded around Boggs and tried to shut him up. About 1 o'clock, it seems they'd finally got Boggs to quiet down. Then Sherburne steps out into the streets with his gun. "Boggs," he calls. Boggs throws up his hands and says, "Oh, Lord, don't shoot!" Bang, bang, go the shots. Boggs falls down to the ground. A few minutes later, he's dead. Well, if By and by, somebody said Sherburne ought to be hung. In a minute, everybody was saying it. So away they went, mad and yelling and snatching every clothesline they could come across to do the hanging with. They swarmed the Sherburne's house, children screaming and trying to get out of the way. You couldn't hear yourself think for the noise. They roll into Sherburne's yard, and he steps out on his porch, perfectly calm, with a double-barrel gun. The racket stopped, and the wave of people moved back. Sherburne sort of laughs and says, "A mob like you is the most pitiful thing there is. You haven't got the bravery to hang a man unless you've got a man leading you. And you only have half a man, Buck Harness. Now leave and take your half a man with you." He cocked his gun, and the crowd went tearing off in every which way, with Buck Harness after them. That night, the king and the duke put on their show, but only 12 people come. So the next day they put out posters for a show called The Royal Nonesuch, which says in big letters, "Ladies and children not admitted." That night the place was packed with men. The duke makes a speech, and then the king comes out, naked and painted like a rainbow. Never mind about the rest of his outfit. It was just as wild, but awfully funny. And the things that old fool done would have made a cow laugh. But pretty quick the duke comes out, "Thanks everyone for coming." 20 people sings out, "Is that all?" The men was all ready to come after the duke and the king, but one man shouts out, "Hold on! We'll look like fools if we let on that we've been cheated. Let's let the rest of the town be cheated too. Then nobody can laugh at us." The men agreed, and the next day you couldn't hear nothing around town but how fine the show was. The next night the place was jammed again. The third night was another big crowd, and they weren't newcomers, but people who was at the first two shows. And they come with rotten eggs and cabbages and dead cats. As soon as everyone paid their money and got in the door, the duke told me to run for the raft, and we took off. Them cheats took $465 in those three nights. I never seen money hauled in like that before. Next morning when I waked, Jim was sitting there with his head between his knees and moaning and sad. I knew what it was about. He was thinking about his wife and children so far away. He'd often done that when he judged I was asleep. This time I got him talking about his wife and young ones. He was feeling bad about his daughter, Lisbeth. Jim told me that when she was 1 year old, she got scarlet fever, but she got well. And one day she was standing around, Jim says to her, "Shut the door!" She just kind of smiled at Jim and made him mad. He says it again, loud, but she just stands there. Finally, he gives her a slap. 10 minutes later, she's standing by the door and the wind blows it shut behind her. Kerblam! And she never moves. Jim bursts out crying and takes her in his arms. "She's deaf and dumb," he says. "She is deaf and dumb, and I've been a-treatin' her so."